QST, QST. This is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday net. 1900 hours local time on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. 147.330 megahertz, offset of 600 kilohertz plus, and a PL of 131.8. This net is conducted every Tuesday at 1900 hours, conditions permitting. This repeater is solely owned, operated, and maintained by the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club. We wish to thank the BBARC for the use of the repeater for this net. The purpose of this net is to provide and promote technical knowledge, education, and information of amateur radio, a gateway to spark interest in various aspects of amateur radio communications. To go where no ham has ever gone. Oh, wait a minute. Sorry. Not that. Before I begin, is there any emergency or priority traffic? Please call KF6Q. Hearing none, are there any bulletins or announcements for that? Please call KF6Q. Okay, only announcement I have here is Big Bear Amateur Radio Club does have their club meeting coming up on the 28th of this month. Also, that'll be at 6:30, tech hour starting at 5:30. There will be ham testing at the same fire station on the 29th at 1 o'clock. And I believe the Desert Rats have a festival, Ham Fest, going on the 28th. So check that out. Go to their website. Topic for the evening will be solar indices and what do they mean. And a little bit about the ionosphere, the different layers. How do they work? How does the gray zone, gray area, whatever it's called, how does that work? How do we get through a little bit better at dusk and dawn? So if we have enough time, we'll move into knife edging and what is usually supposed to be line of sight VHF, quite often is not. All right, I'll now call a brief roster of some of our members who are out there most of the time. First on the list is WB6CLZ Mike.
Good evening, Tom, and everyone in the net. This is WB6CLZ.
Hey, Mike, WB6CIN right there, too?
I'm right here, Tom. This is WB6CIN.
Okay, Mike, Cindy, great seeing you this morning at breakfast, and well, you're definitely getting your exercise out there on the trails. KA6CIA, George, are you with us this evening?
Yes, I am. Good evening, Tom and the group, KA6CIA.
Okay, George, glad you got your 2 meter reset going there. Okay, I know Harry and Nancy are probably out of range, but we'll give Harry a quick call. KE6RJ. And I can hear there. How about KJ6HZS, Mike?
Evening, Tom. And that, this is KJ6HZS.
Hey, Mike. Hey, glad hearing you out there. Once again, I missed you a couple weeks there. It's courtesy check-in for your dad, K6EKX. How about WA6ITC? Rod, are you out there?
Yeah, no, we're out here. WA6ITC.
And this is KF6Q with the Tech Tuesday Net on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. That's what happens, Rod. You check in as a guest too long, you end up getting on the roster. How about KJ6FIL? Mike?
Good evening, Tom, and everybody else. KJ6FIL.
Hey, Mike from Redlands. Glad to have you listening in. How about KJ6KDL? He was in transit. Don't know if he's home yet.
Was that me? KJ6KDL just made it in the door.
and look out, he's running KJ6KDK Rosemary.
KJ6KDK here, good evening.
Hey Jim, Rosemary, thanks for being out there. A little mention out here to everybody listening in. Jim does have all of the Tech Tuesdays audio since, I think, well, almost all the way solid back to September of 2010, I believe. So, good deal. Thanks, Jim. How about W6GZI, Frank? And been heard. How about KI6IQA, Kelly? And nothing heard. How about K6GVL, Ron from Green Valley?
Good evening, Tom and Lynette. This is Ron, K6GVL, Green Valley Lake.
Hey, Ron, glad to have you with us, and actually a lot lately here. Good to hear that. How about 86PL, Harold?
You mean 86PL?
Hey, Harold, thanks for holding down the fort down there in Riverside. N6BOP, Ann, are you out there? And nothing heard. How about K6LTS Quint from Aruba Valley?
Good evening, and I'll be in a better position for the satellite report, K6LTS.
Hey, Quint, good deal. Glad to have you with us this evening. Appreciate that. All the work you do for us with the satellite stuff. Don't know if these two are out there having same issues with the radio. W6JLM Judith and W6KMM Kent.
Good evening, Tom and the Net. This is W6JLM. No radio issues tonight. We'll be listening.
Well, fantastic. W6KMM next to you there.
Good evening, Tom and everyone on the Net. This is W6KMM.
Roger that. Glad to have you with us. And I got to tell you, man, another beautiful day up here in Sugarloaf. It was almost like summer. Let's see. Moving on down the list here. How about K6YNW, Chris?
Good evening, Tom and Annette. K6YNW.
Chris, glad to have you checking in, I believe, from Palm Springs, Palm Desert area there. And we have KJ6TIJ or W6POO. I don't know, Chip. Are you, which one are you using now?
Oh, good evening, Tom. The net, last night I looked, still TIJ, so good evening to you at all. It's KJ6TIJ.
Okay, Chip, good deal, and hope you get your original call sign back here pretty quick. So good, may just take a little while. How about KD6LEN, Bill?
Yeah, good evening, group. We're out here doing you-know-what on you-know-what listening, KD6LAM.
Okay, Bill, good deal. Hey, it's 5 o'clock somewhere. Time to quit working on that car. All right, let's see here. We have, how about AE6CK Victor?
Good evening, Tom and Jeanette. Victor, AE6CK, and I wonder how cold it is right now, Tom, over.
Well, Victor has been getting down into below freezing at night. I'm going to say somewhere between 25 and 30. Definitely warming up in the day, low 50s, and boy, maybe even higher than that today. So you're going to love the weather if you get up here. How about KA6ROD, Rod?
Good evening, everyone. KA6ROD listening.
Okay, Rod, appreciate you being out there. KB6LTY, Christy from Apple Valley. Hey, nothing heard. Pretty much concludes the list as I have it here. Anybody else want to check in as a guest, please come back to KF6Q.
KJ6RAY.
KJ6RAY, Ray, glad to have you out there. It's been quite a few weeks. We'll get you on the list again. Anybody else?
WA6HNQ, Clancy in Garden Grove.
Garden Grove, good deal. Sounds like the coffee is good. We're getting you into the repeater real solid. Anybody else?
M7, Whiskey November Oscar, Mike, Victorville.
Mike in Victorville, glad to have you with us this evening. You're in the repeater solid. Anybody else?
Thomas, W6AEWL, how's it tonight?
Hey, Art, got you in here, W6AWL. Not sure if there was somebody underneath you there or not. Little noise, not bad, but full copy. Anybody else? All right, well, that's pretty much got it there. And anybody else who's listening out there, feel free to join in anytime. Any questions, suggestions, or comments, all are welcome. Well, let's start out first. We do a little DX report. We are going to be dealing with a lot of DX indexes and stuff like that. Mike, in your very busy schedule, have you been able to do any DXing over the last week? WB6CLZ, KF6Q.
Oh, Tom, haven't done much of that, and I've got my special radio is down and broken right now. Got parts ordered, but yeah, not much time to do that. But things look like they may be coming to fruition here in the future. Okay, well, I'm going to give a propagation report, and we're going to throw out a few more numbers than we normally do. And thanks to the July 2011 issue of QST, an article written by Joel W1Z Romeo, W1ZR, on the solar indices, we're going to, with a little help from our friends, dig into that and see what in the world these numbers mean. I've been scratching through this for the last year or so trying to understand it, and so, you know, I'm learning with everyone else. Well, space weather is reporting a sunspot number of 90 and 10.7 centimeter solar flux index of 142 solar flux units. We've got DXQSL.net, the propagation report, and they're reporting an A index of 4 and a K index of 1. We've got a couple of sunspots out there on the Earth-facing disk of the Sun that look pretty promising for a little more uptick. Sunspots number 1391 and 1393, they have determined that they have beta-gamma magnetic fields, and they harbor energy for M-class solar flares. And M-class solar flare is a medium solar flare. There are X-class, M-class, and C-class flares. That's about where we want to be. So I threw those out there, and let's get into this and see what in the world those things mean. Back to you, Tom.
Well, thanks, Mike. Appreciate that. Yeah, we're going to send it over here to Clint here in just a second. See what we have cooking out there, or cooking up there 500 miles up. And Mike, a lot of these indices, or spaceweather.com is probably one of probably a thousand out there, but that's probably a pretty good site. Is that correct?
That's my quick and easy go-to site. Kind of gives you an idea on what's going on. The one I'm looking at now is dx.qsl.net propagation. That's also a good one. It gives a little few more indices than Space Weather does without having to dig around too much for it.
Okay, roger that. And anybody out there, if you are working on or designing or are webmastering a website, there are a couple of little, we call them widgets out there, where you can actually put on your site, generally free of charge, noting the source, of a lot of good stuff there with that. A lot of good stuff. If you're interested in that, just send me an email. I'll send you where to get this stuff at. Pretty cool. We're going to have that on our Tech Tuesday site when it is up and running. Stay patient. I know it's been a year. Many, many things on the burners right now. So, anyway, send me an email if you have any questions about that to kf6q@arrl.net. That's Q little Foxtrot 6 Quebec. Do not spell that out. kf6q@arrl.net. And be more than willing to help you out there. Let me reset. All right, well, before we get into that topic, Clint out there in Harupa Valley land, K6LCS. Hey, what's cooking up there about 500 miles?
Hey, Tech Tuesday, Matt. Good evening. Let's see. First of all, at 7 o'clock tomorrow morning, I'll be at the Lake Arrowhead Rotary Club at their breakfast meeting. My wife is giving a talk on her recent trip to Turkey on behalf of Rotary International. Don't forget, folks, our contact with the space station in mid-April. The kids at Flabob Airport will be speaking with an astronaut aboard the ISS the week of the 16th of April, 2012. That website is iss-flabob.com. It's iss-flabob, F-L-A-B-O-B.com. And speaking of space, I'm having breakfast with Captain Kirk next week. Break for a second.
I don't believe it.
That's okay. You don't need to believe it. I'll have photos and autographs to prove it. Captain Kirk and his wife are benefactors to many agencies and funds in the country, and we submitted a proposal to them with the equine therapeutic horse ranch that my wife and I both volunteer. We're on the board for down here in the Herba Valley, and they're giving us a check, and we're invited to the breakfast to receive that check. So I'm having breakfast with Captain Kirk, man. How cool is that? Speaking of QST Magazine, if you already lent your 2002 January issue out, there's a great construction article in there for making a 2-meter 440 tape measure beam by W6NBC. And I have a reprint for you on worksat.com, work-sat.com. Go to the antennas page and you can download that article. If you're not an ARRL member yet, or if you've misplaced your January QST. Let's see, one more note here. Oh, that's right, FM LEOs. What's left? What have we got left? Well, we've got AO27 and SO50, and of course the International Space Station you can monitor with 2 meters also. AO27, the frequency remains the same. It's actually the same setup as SO50. But you need to go to the little site to find out when it's actually going to be on. It's not on for that entire 15-minute pass usually here on the West Coast. So it's on. It'll start rising, and nothing. And about mid-pass, when you're just about ready to fold it up and say, "I'm sorry, it's not there," bang, it's there. So go to the AO27 links on worksat.com. for the complete info on working 27. Tom, that's about all I've got, unless I missed something. K6LCS.
Well, Clint, appreciate all that. And I do have, I'm assuming that you are actually having lunch with William Shatner and his wife, or is there truly a Captain Kirk? And this is somebody totally different.
No, it is indeed a breakfast with William Shatner and his wife in Toluca Lake at a media-covered event. It's going to be great. It's going to be great.
Well, good deal. Now, I think that's pretty cool, and I know he's done a lot of stuff for a lot of things. So, great job you're doing out there, Clint, and keep that up. Keep us informed, and, yeah, please send us the pictures. Appreciate that. It'd be really great.
Okay, and I apologize for being one of these people who sneaks into nets and leaves, but I got to leave. I got some work I have to get done on a couple of websites. So thank you, Tech Tuesday, Tom. K6LCS.
All right, Clint, we'll appreciate that. Well, okay, let's see. Mike, we got actually a couple double whammy here. You're going to handle the solar indices, and I'm going to handle the ionosphere and all the different layers and some of the cool stuff here. Mike, you're pulling that information, I believe, from July 2011 issue of QST, page 37. If anybody out there has got that issue, you can dial that in. Pretty cool article. And this is one place where, like I said, the QST magazine, all this great information, you get that magazine for free if you join with the ARRL, and it's about, what, $33 plus or minus, depending on how many years you sign up for. Great stuff. Help support ham radio in Washington, D.C. You get all kinds of other information, too. So report ARRL. Sign up. Get these issues. Anyway, Mike, solar indices and what do they mean? Good article by Joel, W1ZR. Let's start out and just give a couple things and I'll give you a little Q&A back to you.
Hey, well, sounds good. Yeah, when you guys realize I've been digging through this for about a year, I still scratch my head an awful lot. So let's see what we can do here. Let's see if we can all understand this together and see what this stuff really means. Well, solar indices, that's what you had said we're working on. And what are solar indices, we ask ourselves? Well, those are numbers in the form of numbers, and it represents sun activity. And, you know, how long have they been doing this? How long have people been concerned? Well, we've got records. They have records going back on daily activity, back to 1818, with average values and various things that the sun does. And what we do is we use that data that's been collected to predict future data and to kind of let us know, well, what can we see coming up, you know, what's going on, rather than just, holy buckets, 10 meters is open. We like to think, well, maybe 10 meters will be open tomorrow. Let's go see what's going on, and we can get predictions, especially from, there's so many prediction software sites out there that it's just ridiculous. Like I say, right now I'm on dx.qsl.net propagation. They've got quite a few, and there's just so many others. There's ones that you can plug in your frequency, plug in your power, plug in your antenna and height and et cetera, and it'll pretty well tell you where your signal will go, how far it will reach, and how far you'll get out. Well, that gives you kind of a basis, and let's go from there. Let's throw this back and forth, Tom.
Okay, so 1818, and we're talking, not that long after the U.S. was the U.S., 1776. Wait a minute, that's when they declared it. We still had to win it by fighting that. So anyway, well, that's a while back, and obviously we didn't have ham radio back then, but it's good information. So if there was ham radio, and when it did come around, which was actually quite a bit later, they could probably see, well, okay, if we had ham radios back then, by golly, Jefferson and Washington could have talked to Europe without an issue. Anyway, no pun intended there, sorry. We have a daily sunspot number, okay, and this is probably an average, I guess, and, how do they rate that? Let's just start out with sunspot, SSN, sunspot numbers.
SSN really stands for smooth sunspot numbers, but it's basically the same thing, a little bit different. We'll get into it. Well, the sunspot numbers are based on the amount of the sun's surface that's covered in spots or spot groups, and then they convert that down to an equivalent number of spots. So, you know, if you have some different spots, different sizes, you can do averages and get pretty close to a basic number, for prediction. Smooth sunspot numbers is another average. It takes it out a little bit further, and it makes it a little bit more consistent. Sunspot numbers, I might add, too, can range from zero, which we've had pretty recently, within the last year or so. We've seen a couple of zero sunspot numbers. To up to as high as 250. Back in the 50s, they had a really good cycle that they were running in the 250 numbers for sunspots. And like I say, today we're looking at 90. We've been up as high as, I want to say, 190 to 200. I couldn't find that anywhere, but I know it got up pretty high there a while back, and they were pretty high, and we had our fingers crossed that it was going to hold, but, you know, we've kind of taken some dips and up and down, and that's normal during the start of a sunspot cycle. Well, that kind of explains sunspot numbers and smooth sunspot numbers. How's that sound? Does that kind of fill you in, Tom?
Okay, well, I think that's got that pretty good. We'll throw it out there real quick, see if anybody else has any questions, and then we'll move ahead. I got questions about this thing called solar radio flux. Anybody out there listening in, any questions about sunspot numbers or smooth sunspot numbers or that, please come back real quick. Right, and that's still open in case somebody decides to ask a question later on. Well, Mike, that's pretty simple and basic. Got that covered. Solar radio flux. This is not tied to the flux capacitor, and no DeLoreans are involved here. What does this mean, solar radio flux? There's another number.
Solar radio flux is a number of the radiation measurement, and it's an intensity number, and it's radio signals emanating from the sun at a wavelength of 2800 megahertz, or 10.7 centimeters. And basically they take that, and they take that measurement, and that gives us, you know, like a total radiation measurement. They're usually higher than sunspot numbers. You know, you can look at your solar flux, and if it's up there, in the 140s and above, you know, you're going to be pretty decent propagation. Not as high as it could be. They range of a low of about 60 to a high of about 300. But that's, you know, when I see there at 140 and 150, I know that the HF band is holding up pretty well. Maybe not the best EX you'd ever want to work, but definitely in a range to where it'd be worth getting on and playing around a little bit.
Okay, so sunspots mean that we've got something going on there, and the solar flux numbers kind of give us an idea, kind of watch those, give us a good idea what's going on out there. And this is 2800 megahertz. Well, it's definitely up there in the microwave area. It tells us how much, probably whatever it is coming at us, that's a guess. And that's probably our first thing to look at for propagation. Would that be probably a good assumption?
Well, I think if there was one number that I would look at just to get an idea of what's going on, the solar flux index is really a good place to start.
All right, well, good deal, good deal. Now, we have quite a few others, so we're going to get into the A and K. And I don't know if anybody out there has recently taken a test. Get your ham license. Some of this stuff is on that ham test, so pay attention if you're going to upgrade or whatever, or just kind of refresh your memory here. Geomagnetic indices. Ooh, okay. Geomagnetic. Talking about magnetism here. And I guess we're going to start talking about coronal mass ejections, too. Well, that sounds like that's dangerous. Let's go ahead and start out with the A and K, Mike. What's that all about?
Well, the A and K are a couple of indices. K index goes from 0 to 9. A index goes from 0 to 400. And, you know, they're measurements of the effect of a coronal mass ejection, which is like a flare. It's a flare that shoots off of the sun and throws out geomagnetic fields. I mean. The K index is like a short-term index. It's a three-hour average, and it's a logarithmic measure of horizontal component of the Earth's magnetic field. And that's perpendicular to the usual field between the Earth's poles. And then the A index, well, that's a linear measurement, similar to a magnetic activity average, of similar magnetic activity averaged over an entire day rather than a three-hour interval. So that's a little bit longer. And they do put that together and make a KP index, but we'll get into that a little bit later.
Okay, so the K and the A kind of the same representing the same thing, but in different scales and different time spans for averaging. You know, I think I can understand that. I think that's kind of hitting home there. Now, I've heard of this called a sudden ionospheric disturbance, or a SID. And from what I understand, that when we have these big old doggone eruptions there in the sun, that the X-rays that travel at the speed of light get here like almost immediate. And I guess that could really mess up some stuff there. If that doesn't sound good to me.
No, it's not good. I'll give you an example of the effect of a SID. We have a morning rag queue at 9 o'clock. Some of the guys in the BBARC get together and get on 39-35 on 75 meters in the morning and just chew the fat. Many topics are discussed. We were on about, 6 months or so, talking our ears off, everything was great, and all of a sudden, gone. Nothing there. Nothing all the way across the 75 meter band. Just gone. Well, I would say within about 5-6 minutes, something like that, signal started coming back, they started going up, and it was like nothing had ever happened. That is what is called a sudden ionospheric disturbance. Very, very frustrating if you're operating during one.
Wow, okay, now, you know, I'm not really on that net all the time, and I drop in once in a while. Anybody out there who's got a general or better license, of course, can more than welcome to drop in there. Wow, okay, because we're going to get into these different ionosphere layers. From what I'm understanding, that the D layer, which is the closest to the Earth, essentially, it just vaporizes or ionizes that so heavy that it just starts absorbing all the HF signals. And I imagine you're telling me that even people in local communications, it just sucked up all the energy and that was that, huh?
Yes, and I know I'm going to get flack saying this, but just it's a term, not reality. It's a black hole to HF radio. How's that? Oh, gosh, I hope that doesn't open up something. Yeah, very disturbing, and hence the name, sudden ionospheric disturbance. Yeah, very unusual. If you've ever experienced one, you'll never forget it. But they travel at that, like I say, X-ray speed, which is the speed of light. So you really don't know what's coming. I mean, there may be a few seconds warning, but nothing that you would pick up. And a lot of times we call that D-layer absorption. There are sites, too, that will also predict or give you readings of the magnitude of the D-layer absorption once one of those have occurred. Very interesting site.
And this is KF6Q with WB6TLZ and the Tech Tuesday Net Group on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater every Tuesday, 1900 hours that we can. Well, Mike, okay, so let's just say that what we don't want to happen is all radio to black out, but this definitely does happen or can happen. And the X-rays, of course, are not good. We know that. Hopefully, they don't all reach down here to the Earth. So with all these different, this all going leading into our second part here of the different layers. The D layer is the closest, E and F1 and F2 are above that, and don't ask me whatever happened to A and B and C, but they don't seem to be on the charts. But anyway, starting with the D layer, which is the closest in, two things these ionospheric layers can do. They can they can actually absorb the radio waves or pass them through. The higher up they are, which is the F layers, and this is all frequency dependent, by the way, if you're listening out there, and it varies, and it's never the same. Well, does that make that fun? Well, Mike, we're going to get into the 10 meter and how that was so wide open here lately, but have we actually experienced a SID with blackout like that recently? I mean, this is can you put a time reference on that, or is this something that could happen or has happened?
I haven't really been following the data because I haven't been on much. but the last one I recall is, like I say, about 6 months ago, and that's during the morning rag queue. And I really didn't pick up intensity or anything like that. I've been kind of busy with work this time of the year. But that's the last one I remember. I was just looking here on I tried to Google it to see when the last one occurred, and I'm not having much luck. So if I can find one, I'll break in.
Okay, Mike, well, that's obvious that definitely something we cannot control and something that pretty much wipes out communications, at least for a short period of time. Maybe you can look up, wasn't able to find this, the altitude or how high above the Earth the D, the E, and the F layers are, the F1, F2, if you can do a quick Google on that, appreciate it. Well, anyway, let me reset here real quick. Before we move on, we're actually the second part here, going to get ready for Sunsot Spiegel. I'll say that again. Get ready for Sunspot Cycle 24. Okay, we're pulling this from Getting on the Air, March 2011 issue. This article is written by W1ZR. He has this this little thing every month. Anyway, we're going to pull from his information here on the different layers. Let me reset. Before we get involved with this, any other questions about the A and K index and SIDS and stuff like that from anybody out there listening, please come back, and of course you can come back later too, but we'll give a little break in here. All right, well, it seems like we're moving right along here. Well, the next thing is that we have these different layers of the ionosphere. And the great thing about that is that if they weren't there and they weren't reflecting or absorbing, basically all our signals are going to go up in the air and simply travel out into space. That's what they do. However, when one of these layers becomes ionized by some of this, basically a couple things do that. The particles that we're talking about coming from the sun is one. Basic sunshine itself starts creating havoc as the sun comes up, goes away when the sun goes down. So, and the thing is as these are different layers, these different layers also respond differently to different frequencies. Let me reset. So for any single day or time or moment, depending on all these different variables that are pretty much, or rather pretty complex, I guess they can be put into a program to kind of kick out some kind of a prediction, we end up with a thing called MUF. And if you've remember that from your license testing or even just from using any type of propagation software, the MUF is the maximum usable frequency. And that is the highest frequency that you can use. Anything higher than that will generally just go straight off into space. That's the highest one. And, well, Mike, I know you don't have this issue, but you know what? I know there's noise out there. Do you ever pay attention to the MUF, or is that something that you don't really track?
As a Navy radioman, MUSF is very critical. We always try to maintain communications as high or as close to the maximum usable frequency as possible. You get better communications the closer you are to the MUF.
Okay, well, that's good. And that makes sense. And let me explain a little bit out there. Anybody out there who already knows this can actually understand this. And if you have not ever heard this, you're about to learn this. A lot of noise and static. We've all heard static on any radio, on any TV or whatever. That's considered noise, pure noise. And then, of course, we have our signal. As we go up higher in frequency, a natural thing is noise tends to go away. And so the ratio of the signal to noise, or more signal, less noise, naturally becomes better as we travel up in higher frequencies. So this is a good thing. The higher the frequency would be, the best. Unfortunately, there is a point at some frequency, traveling up in frequency, up in frequency, that it simply does not reflect off of anything and goes straight out in space, or simply point to point. And we're going to get to point to point a little bit later. Let me reset. Now, another thing, as we want to stay close to this maximal usable frequency, which has less noise and the most distance we're going to get because it's reflecting also off of pretty high. I think the higher the frequency generally is reflecting off a very higher layer of the ionosphere. Other things happen. Lower frequencies tend to be absorbed. So just because it's really great up there at the MUF, and we don't have very much noise or less noise, as we get down to lower frequency, you say, well, I could put up with a little bit of noise. Well, that's not the issue, because some of those lower frequencies on the same conditions are going to be absorbed and bounce actually absolutely nowhere. we've got this kind of little game going there with the atmosphere and the ionosphere, actually, of, you know, what's going to happen. So I'd say, Mike, if you're going to go on any website and look at propagation, I would say probably look for the MUF, because that's going to tell you what's open. If the MUF is up in the 10-meter band or above it, that'd be great. Is that correct?
Totally correct. If it's up at 30 megahertz, then you're sitting pretty, unless you're a 6-meter guy. And then there's another one we're going to talk about when we get into these layers and distances.
Yeah, and roger that. You know, and actually, this all these conditions vary. You know, essentially, you know, when we had 10 meters open here some time back, a lot of that was because of the fact that, you know, we had probably the best conditions. The MUF was way up there above 10 meters, which I would assume is probably not a common thing. And the sunspot activity helps that because we get all that stuff coming from the sun to ionize the different layers. And seems like a pretty good deal. Mike, have I left anything out?
Take a second in kilometers to get, because I couldn't find it in feet or miles, to give you an idea on where the layers are. When we were talking about the D layer, the one that sometimes has the dreaded D layer absorption, we're talking 60 to 90 kilometers. Then there's the E layer. That's 90 to 120 kilometers. Then there's a fragmented and or kind of sporadic layer called the sporadic E layer. That's the one where the 6-meter guys just really enjoy in the spring and early summer. We've got a lot of sporadic E openings, and that's kind of a boon for 6 meters when nothing else is cooking. We try to catch those whenever they come around. And then the highest one is the F layer, and that's 200 to 500 kilometers. Back to you, Tom.
Hey, this is KSSQ, Tech Tuesday Net, on the Big Bear Amateur Radio Club repeater. Well, okay, and I can do a quick conversion there if anybody wants to remember this. Kilometers to miles. Well, okay, and this is a shot from the hip and a basic number. 100 kilometers is 60 miles. 100 is an easy number to remember. 60 miles is like mile a minute if you're doing 60 miles an hour. That's pretty much it. So, Mike, if we've got 60 kilometers, 60%, that would be about 36 miles. 90 kilometers, this is for the D layer, and you said it varies, and we know that, would be 54 miles. Now, we're going, so from about 36 to 54 miles, well, at 40 miles, wow, that's pretty high. Well, say 5,000 miles plus, that's like 200,000 feet up. That's up pretty high. I don't think our jets fly that high. Back to you, Mike.
Now that's just one of those really, really special ones that we're not supposed to know about.
Yeah, roger that. So just to give anybody an idea there, the lowest layer of the ionosphere that we're going to deal with radio communications, is still as an average is up there about 200,000 feet. 200,000 feet of altitude, pretty high up. And Mike, I know you mentioned the E and the F, but where is the F at? I'm looking at it on this piece of paper. That's got to be up there a ways. Do you have those numbers still handy?
F layer, 200 to 500 kilometers. Go ahead and convert that for me. I'm an old guy.
Well, 200 is twice as much as 100. That'd be 120 miles. Wow. And if I'm wrong with this math, I will be standard corrected. But I'm going to say about 200 miles to 230 miles. 120 to 130 miles, 150 miles. Wow. If I'm not mistaken, something would have to be in orbit to be that high, as far as what we're concerned with our astronauts and satellites and stuff like that.
Very correct, and that is why we get such good propagation off it, because it's way high up there.
Okay, roger that. that. So if we're bouncing off the F layer, ooh doggies, and this is where we get all that great propagation. Well, that's fantastic. Now, before we get into sporadic E or anything like that, and the E layer is down closer in, little thing here, this stuff, these layers, of course, change a little bit. They don't even stay constant through the day. I think they kind of dissolve or go away at nighttime, because from what I understand, you can do DX a lot better at night than the daytime. Is that correct?
Well, you can do some low-band DXing, but I think during the daytime is kind of my favorite time. That's when 20 meters and 10 meters of all the MUF pulls in. Yeah, there's been some pretty good DX even on 160 meters and 75 meters.
Okay, well, I just looking at this chart here, and I know that it's always better to DX during the day because we sleep at night. That's probably one good reason. However, just as an FYI, and this is what Tech Tuesday is all about, what happens at nighttime is there's two different layers of the F ionosphere, and we're talking about, what were you, like 120, 150 miles up. They kind of merge into one. And what happens at nighttime is the D and the E layer tend to disappear. A lot of this is created by the sunlight, and you know this sometimes is bad because it's going to absorb stuff. So the lower layers disappear. So there's nothing there to absorb, leaving it wide open to go to the upper layer. And from what I understand, this is a good thing. Back to you, Mike.
That's correct, and you can read all about that in a wonderful book called Low Band DXing. Some of the older guys up here that play around on 160 and 75 and a little bit on 40, that is their Bible.
And another thing that's good about nighttime, and this is kind of a going from memory and a shot from the hip here, when the sun is down, a lot of the noise that we get, from the sun, static or whatever, tends to not go away completely. It tends to really drop off. Is that correct?
In my experience, I don't have the antennas to support that. You know, I've just got the 160 meter loop, which works pretty well. And I do sleep at night. But yeah, the times that I have listened, yeah, the noise levels are really nice and low, especially at night.
Roger that. We have to understand one thing. We're talking about DX here, everybody who's listening in. Now, if you're talking DX, meaning like we're in California, we're going to talk to New York, well, okay, they're 3 hours away. But if you're in California and talking to Japan, or you're talking to New Zealand, or you're talking to Korea, or if you're going to go over the pole, you're talking to Europe, if you start adding up the time difference, our daytime is definitely not their daytime. So, yeah, ham radio, I guess a DXer, a true DXer in ham radio knows no special hours for sleep, which I don't know if that would be actually be something I'd want to do. Mike, and you're doing just fine with doing the stuff during the daytime. Is that correct?
Yeah, Tom, but sometimes when the band conditions are good, we'll get up a little bit early before the sun comes up. And Europe is very achievable, you know, in that area. Then sometimes later in the evening, you can work into Africa and, you know, in our time, and some of the other stuff out that way. It all depends. It depends on propagation and what's going on. Sometimes if everything's right, 20 meters is open, hasn't been lately much, but is opened, 24 hours, and it really doesn't matter. You can catch them whenever they happen to be on, whether it be our day and their night or vice versa.
And, you know, this is one thing I want to add in here about the, we call it the delineator zone or the gray zone. And what that is that it's that special, the sun's going down or probably coming up. It depends, I guess, which, where you are on the earth. Essentially, at that point in time, let's just say as the sun is going down, what you have is the noise going away from the sun. You have the D and E layer disappearing, But you still have enough ionization up there in the F layer for that great DX, because the higher up it is, the further away it's going to bounce. We're talking about bouncing off a mirror for radio waves that's up there at about 120 to 150 miles. So that's why that gray zone is really kind of cool to work. You're going to find special stuff. And if there's enough ionization of that upper layer, like you say, sometimes it'll go straight through the night, not a problem, because the F will stay ionized throughout the night before we have anything else coming on to the next day. So, well, Mike, pretty cool stuff. I don't think we're going to have enough to do knife edging and stuff like that with VHF this evening. Maybe we can work into that next week. But anything else you can think about there? I mean, there's a couple of great sites, good sites for all this stuff. And you know what? Let's send it out there, see if anybody has any questions or comments about that. Please come back to KF6Q, Tech Tuesday Net. Not hearing anything out there. Mike, anything to add? You know, and this is one thing I have to say that's great about getting your general license or working some of this stuff on the little small section that you got as a tech on the 10-meter. If you want to talk, you can talk around the world to without an issue. These are the things to pay attention to, because basically, I think I was talking with Mick today, WA6FIZ, thought possibly 10 was open, nobody was talking, but you know what, the beacons, couldn't hear the beacons, so the beacons aren't out there, probably not going to hear anybody. Anything else to add, Mike? Please come back to KO6Q.
Couple of them. Beacons. Yeah, we didn't mention beacons. By golly, you can tune around kind of lower, right, kind of usually between the CW portion and the sideband portion of the band. You'll get beacons in. Basically, if you're hearing a beacon in Alaska, you could probably work Alaska. Some of those go down to 100 milliwatts. They have different types of beacons. If you've got internet access, Google that. There's a lot of information there. Another thing we forgot is trans-equatorial propagation. Usually in the later afternoons, when the South Americans start coming in, equal distance from the equator, approximately equal distance, yet opposite distance from the equator. We're up here and in Southern California, working down into the northern part of South America is real easy, and it spreads out a little bit sometimes, where you work way down into Cape Horn and like that. But yeah, trans-equatorial propagation is a good way to get your South American countries under your belt.
AG6TIJ.
Chip, go ahead.
Yes, Tom. Enjoying it tonight, as always. And to add to it, what I've experienced in the last about 3 weeks or so, I'll be watching the shadow line go work its way around the world. And I have an old Palm Pilot, of all things. And of course, you can see that on any of the sites on the web. But I just left the old Palm Pilot. When I turn it on, it shows me the 24 hours a day, the shadow line of where the sun is. And I kind of watch the gray line come across Europe. And about midnight our time, on 40 meters, I start hearing Spain. It's where they start to kind of wake up, if you will. And if you have a little insomnia and you want to make a little of a few contacts around Spain and that section of Europe, take a look around right around 7.25, and give it here, and it just sort of fades in. It's not usually right around midnight.
Well, great information there, Chip. You know, now, like I say, the gray line, I've been calling a gray zone. Please apologize for that all night, but it could be the gray zone. But, Mike, also, when you're talking trans-equatorial, that would just be another bounce from the gray line, I guess, actually, is that's just going north to south instead of out towards the east or west. Would that make sense?
I think so. I don't have the exact definition. definition in front of me, and you know, if anybody has any questions, they can Google that to get exactly what's going on. But it's really cool because with very low power, I mean, a couple of watts, I've worked down into Chile and you know, that sort of thing. So it pretty efficient means of propagation when it's cooking. Yeah, that and Gray Line also, like was mentioned, is just really great to have that kind of an app on your phone or on your computer tell you exactly what's going on. Back to you, Tom.
Yeah, and I do have a Palm Pilot. Of course, it's not charged up and not functioning at this time, but that's kind of a cool thing. Like you say, a lot of iPhone or Android, you know, phones that are really pretty cool set up that way. Boy, don't we have technology helping us out. But I think right there, Mike, we really just, that one thing that we forgot about and just mentioned, the beacons that are out there, if you can get a list of beacons, in different areas, different frequencies, that's the key thing. I mean, no matter what all these indices and everything show, if you can hear the beacon, you can generally work the area, and that's the whole key right there. That's everything in a nutshell, and all the rest of it's kind of gingerbread on top. You know, anybody else, Mike, what do you think about that? I think that's, if I was going to actually try to work something, I think the first thing I try to do is just look at the beacon so I can hear them. Now, there's somebody out there. You then know that, well, I can get back there to Minnesota or Alaska or whatever, but maybe nobody's got their radio on. So wouldn't be my fault. So there.
But I just Googled HF beacons, and I mean, I've got a page full. So there's a lot of information. You can Google VHF beacons, too. I know 6 and 2 meters also have beacons, and I'm sure 432, 440. But yeah, just Google beacons, and boy, you'll get a whole complete list.
Good deal. That's fantastic. And I know we're still just beginning into cycle 24. I mean, this is just some of the great stuff that's starting to happen. So if you're out there listening in, you got your tech license, by golly, study up. Get your general, you know, come out and play with all the toys and the fun and all the rest of us out there. You know, you're right there at the beginning of probably one of the best things about ham radio. And Mike, what's it, 7 to 11 years before the next one will come around?
Yeah, that's usually when the old bear here hibernates and waits for the next one. Hopefully I live that long. Yeah, it's about 11-year cycle, and, you know, enjoy this one while you can, because the next one's going to be about 11 years. You know, we've got some openings here and there in between. It's not totally hopeless, but we'll enjoy this one while it's here.
All right, well, good deal. All right, okay, well, we're going to get close to wrapping up here, and just want to do a little propagation thing this evening. Especially right after we had the 10-meter contest here a while back, and a lot of great 10-meter openings, and just do a little explanation of why it's happening. Still a little confusing, but Google some of this stuff, and, you know, there's a lot of information out there in the net. Well, Mike, before we close, anything else to add?
Nothing really, just that, you know, as always, I have learned a lot. This is a subject near and dear to my heart. I am just a novice. I'm just, you know, getting into it for a year or so, but this is something I really want to learn, really want to know what's happening, and naturally looking up and doing all the research kind of helps. So, yeah, let's keep up the good work. I like this stuff. Back to you, Tom. KF6Q, WB6CL, then.
Well, Mike, thank you for doing all the research, and I've tried to pull all this together with some of the stuff I had here. Fantastic. It's really great. Anybody else out there with anything to add or comment on or questions, please come back now before we close the net to KF6Q.
KJ6KDL.
Yes, Jim, go ahead.
Just in case somebody does have the Gordon West Technician Class book and does not have the March 2011 QST, there is on page 92 a section called The Effect of the Ionosphere on Radio Waves with a very similar artist drawing of the layers with the distance in miles on the chart, and yes, you're very close. F1 is listed between 90 and 150 miles on the Gordon Doesn't mean he's correct, but that's what it says. And then the test questions are right after that.
Well, I think Jim, like as we said, the actual altitude of those vary. They do vary. It's not like a carved in stone thing. So, yeah, we're just, you know, he's probably correct. 120 miles is correct. 150 miles is correct. But they do vary, and that's a good reference there. There's also a lot of other good references, too, in the amateur radio handbook. That's good, you know, good, too. But, yeah, if you do have any study guides, good deal there, Jim. That's a good reference. Anybody else out there with any other questions or comments or suggestions, please come back to KF6Q. All right, Mike, well, either we answered all the questions or we've put them asleep again, one of the two. Okay, anyway, appreciate everybody else out there listening this evening. Little quick primer, as we call it, on what's going on out there with the delineator, the gray zone, the ionosphere, some of these indexes, and a whole lot of information to have. Like I say, go to spaceweather.com, very good site. A lot of good stuff there. And also, there's a lot of other information out there on the net, Googling propagation. So hopefully everybody can get their questions answered out there. And if not, feel free to email us, especially myself, at kf6q@arrl.net or wb6clz @arrl.net for Mike. And we'll get back to you ASAP. So. All right, QST, 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 this is Tom Fry, KF6Q, net control for the Tech Tuesday Net, closing the net at 2,000 hours and I believe 1 minute. Well, Mike, everybody out there, thanks for listening in. Definitely appreciate all the participation, and good luck out there in Sunspot Cycle 24. That's hard to say sometimes. Returning the repeater to normal use.